From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back, Chiefs fans. I hope you're as excited as I am. We are going to run the second half, day two of our talk with Matt Waldman, all about Patrick Mahomes and his evolution through the preseason last season as well as the game in Denver. And Matt has gone through the film with a fine-tooth comb and has tendencies, has everything you need to know about Patrick going into this season for the Chiefs and what he can achieve. Stick with us to the end of the episode because we're going to talk about the future, stats, predictions, that kind of thing. But we're going to go through it step by step. So we're not going to take too much time. We're going to get right back into it. This is part two of Matt Waldman. And we're back for part two of our conversation with Matt Waldman. And if you missed yesterday, go back and listen to that because there's a ton of information there. And Matt's gone through all the tape that humanly possible of Patrick Mahomes, at least as a professional. So I appreciate that.
That was a real heavy load, I'm telling you.
But, you know, today I want to talk about a couple of things that stand out in terms of not just the schematic kind of thing, but the actual technical bits. And I think the thing that stood out to me in both rewatching, and I was at the Denver game week 17. I was there live. So I saw it from a whole different perspective until I went back and looked at the tape. And then you echoed a lot of things that I was seeing. And there's this kind of what I think is a false narrative that he makes these gorgeous no-look throws where he doesn't have any clue what he's doing. But the more I watch his film, the more I see him being at a level that is just so advanced for basically a rookie, in that he looks players off constantly, consistently, and effectively. And do you see that across his game, or is it just in select plays?
Oh, no, I see it across his game, and it's always been there. And that's the thing is that when you call a player a gunslinger, certain things come with that. And they're good and bad. When you call a player gunslinger, the stereotype of a gunslinger is that they can make all these off-platform throws. They've got a naturally strong arm. They often are fairly mobile, and they can make some of the – they're really aggressive. So they're like these hyper-aggressive, laser-armed, mobile guys who, you know, fit the ball in because they can. Because, you know, I joke around – because of that whole Gruden episode where they asked him about the throw and he said, cause I can, you know, and there is some of that cause I can in there. You have that swagger with his game, but there, what they miss is that they think also because these quarterbacks do that, that the stereotype of the gunslinger is that they don't have any technique. They don't read the field. They don't show any anticipation, and they just don't really read the offense. You know, it fits in with the whole Brett Favre lore of, he didn't know what a nickel defense was until his second full year as a starter. And yeah, that was the case. But at the same time, he also invented the RPO, and he also, you know, operated the most complex offense that has ever been in football, which is the West Coast scheme, and was a three-time MVP doing it. So it's not like he was just some savant who, you know, who basically couldn't read anything and just operated on drilling the ball, you know, burning the ball through a linebacker's chest on his way to a receiver. That's just not how that happened. So, you know, there were throws that probably seemed that way, and you're going to see throws that seem that way with Mahomes. But the thing with him is that there are often, most of the time, very logical things he's looking at. And as far back as Texas Tech, what you'd often see is he understood the read. He saw at that exact split second where the leverage was, and because he was confident in his arm, he was confident in being able to really just kind of thread that needle. And he's got that aggression to thread the needle, but there's smarts with it. It's like when you look at Jameis Winston, who is a smart quarterback, but not a wise quarterback. When you looked at his game, he oftentimes tried to burn a hole through dropping defenders because he didn't see the defender and he was too quick to try and make a play. Whereas when you look at Mahomes, it's never really about that. It's more about this defender's leverage is in a certain way and I can arc it over him or behind him and he's not going to turn around in time. And I'm going to hit this guy, you know, between a triangle of defenders that's really shrinking fast, but because I saw it fast enough, he's going to thread right through it and not get touched. And he did that with Kiki QT a lot at Texas Tech. And you saw some evidence of those types of plays with him in this game where receivers were coming back to the ball and he's able to make some of these off balance throws, but he's often throwing into wide open areas or in areas where only the receiver is going to make the play. And so you see logic and intelligence and high end accuracy behind what he's doing, as opposed to other players who are maybe smart in recognizing things and understanding what they're supposed to do, but may not be wise in being patient enough or being confident enough and quick enough to recognize the things they're supposed to recognize. And so Mahomes does that.
And you mentioned a couple of things there that are really important to me. And I'm going to go back a little bit. You were talking about technique. And I do want to hit a question on that really quick. And then I have another question as well. One of the things that Mahomes really got hammered for pre-draft process was his footwork is horrible. His footwork was horrible. His footwork was horrible. That's what you heard the entire time. Now, granted, I'm not arguing his footwork was not good, but that looks like it's changed. I'm not going to say it's great now, but it looks like he is very much improved in that area. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, and it's funny, that whole argument, because I actually was one of those lone idiots that argued that his footwork was better than people made it out to be. Because you think about it in this context, when you watch a show, like if you've ever watched, you know, any type of show that's set in a period or in a neighborhood or in a place where people speak differently than what you would say is, you know, the English that you're taught in high school and in grammar school. Well, if you're going to try and sound pseudo-intellectual, you know, you're going to point out all the errors of grammar that these people use. And if you were reading a script, you might actually, you know, if you weren't aware of the context, you might actually look at that and say, oh, this isn't good writing. You know, it's not grammatically correct. There's all these errors in usage and all these different terms that misspellings and all sorts of problems. And what you're missing is the context of the play. And when you look at Patrick Mahomes' play, yes, there were times that he should have been more precise with where his feet were, and his feet can be somewhat close together. But I've always looked at mechanics, and I talk with this with quarterback coaches all the time, and they echo the same thing. The good ones that I talk with, that are the ones I feel really good about and who have done work with NFL players and other pro leagues and college players and all the way down to, you know, high school and middle school. And what they talk about is that oftentimes we apply way too often one template of a successful player to the whole. So you look at Tom Brady's footwork and go, everyone should have Tom Brady's footwork, but everyone's not Tom Brady's biomechanical makeup. And as a result of that, we're applying a standard that's unrealistic and may not actually work all that well. The thing is that there are some fundamental sound things you're looking for to have a balanced stance. And there are times that Mahomes can get a little off balance because his footwork's was a little too narrow. But other times what you notice is that he was able to make pinpoint accurate throws, turn and avoid pressure, reset, fire pinpoint accurate throws. And it wasn't with that Tom Brady perfect looking footwork. So the point is, does he get it done? Can he replicate it consistently in a variety of situations where he isn't costing himself opportunities from first to second read, second to third read, moving away from pressure? And he wasn't costing himself those things. But does it mean that it's perfect? No. And certainly there were times that he could probably have, you know, he rushed certain throws where he could have had his feet set more. But when he was, even if his feet were too narrow by the standard, if you watched how quick and precise they were getting into that position and how quick and precise the ball got out and where it was located, you can look at that and go, do you really want to widen his stance on those types of plays when he knew exactly what he was doing? He got rid of it quickly and he could transition from movement to movement to create second and third route targets doing that. And the answer for me is no. It's just like, I wouldn't want to change Brett Favre bringing the ball down below his thigh at age 40 with the Vikings in the NFC Championship game, firing over a middle pressure and completing passes that way. You know, why am I going to mess with that? And Andy Reid, that's why I was so excited about Andy Reid being his coach, because Andy Reid looked at Brett Favre and knew, you know, as Brett Favre has talked about even this year, is that Reid didn't try to correct me. He didn't try to correct every little thing, because a lot of coaches, especially younger coaches, have that kind of syndrome of like, I got to show people I know what I'm talking about, and I'm going to correct this and I'm going to correct that. Next thing you know, the quarterback's overthinking all these meaningless things in comparison to what the real mission is. And so Reed's looking at Mahomes and thinking, well, if he's not doing it right now, I'm not going to harp on him, because he's going to start overthinking, and let him play how he's playing. Maybe at the end of the year, we'll talk about, these are the things we'd like you to start working on to correct, because we think you'll be more frequently accurate in these isolated situations. And that's what I think that Reed probably does, based on what how Favre talked about that. And that's good teaching, because you wouldn't have drafted this guy and started this guy and seen the accuracy that he does with the existing footwork he has. So he's been a little clearer with transitioning in terms of climbing in the pocket and being able to move from one route to the next. But there are times where even there, his feet can get a little wide, and then he overthrew a ball and had an interception for that exact reason, where his feet got a little bit wide on a play. But again, these are things where, again, it's like having a, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning author show you their script, their, you know, a draft of their newest book, and you not being an editor and having no understanding of what that means, that someone's showing that to you and they ask you what you think, and they're expecting you to tell them about concepts and themes and whether the things were communicated clearly, and you're noting comma splices and misspellings of words because the person just, it was a draft. You know, and that's kind of how I think that oftentimes the media and analysts can get with technique, and because they're like, well, I noticed that, you know, and they get excited, as opposed to what's the context there? Is that a major communication error? And sometimes an interception isn't a major communication error. I mean, it looks like that, but then you're like, that would have happened to five quarterbacks that week who had to throw the same route, and it's a common error, as opposed to, you know, is he not being able to be accurate on five-step drops? Every five-step drop he can't throw accurately, then you've got a problem. But one, it may stink for that game and fans are going to get an uproar, but it doesn't mean that he has footwork problems.
Absolutely. And
well, we're going to take a second here, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about the future.
You want to talk about the future? I want to ask a quick question, one other quick question. I had two specific plays, and I wanted to talk to both you and Matt about this, Ryan. There were two plays to Demetrius Harris in that game against Denver. The first one was a pass on third down and long, the first drive, that he absolutely threaded a needle. My question to both of you is, that was an offside play. Do you think he knew it was offsides? And he wouldn't make the throw if he didn't know he had a free play, or is that just who he is as a QB? And then the second play for Demetrius Harris was basically almost an interception that Harris actually saved from being an interception, because Mahomes rolled out back to his right and didn't get his feet set anywhere close to being able to set, and then just lofted the ball up there.
Yeah, and I those were two interesting plays. I'm glad you brought them up, because the first one I can say – I mean, honestly, my answer would be, I don't really know if he knew it was offsides or not, and I'd have to go back and look at it to study it from that angle. But I could tell you just from watching him at Texas Tech that is his game, and that he is capable. He does do that. So it might have been a little bit of both. And then the second play, you also saw this with a rollout with Garrett Dieter on a pivot route, where he was a little, it seemed like he rushed his footwork on a roll because he had a defender coming at him, and might have been able to get outside that defender and take a couple more steps and throw it on the ninth step, as opposed to throwing it on the fifth step, or maybe it was the seventh step instead of the fifth step, or the ninth step instead of the seventh step. I don't remember how many it was, but he rushed it to get rid of the ball, and it was just outside Dieter's reach. And Dieter probably should have caught it, but it was still an uncomfortable throw. And I think the same thing happened on that rollout early in the game, where it's just kind of like, it's early in the game. That's the difference between being a good coach who's not overcorrecting and understanding the emotion of the game. And that's where I think a lot of times the analytics component can get, you got to put that in context and go, these guys aren't computers. This is his first NFL start. He's playing one of the best defenses in the league, and he's jacked up about getting the chance to play. And of course, he may rush a throw here or there early in the game or in certain situations, especially on rollouts. So, looking at that, I think that if anything, you could say he needs to be a little bit more patient on rollouts and make sure that he's got his feet under him and he's not rushing the process. And I would say that would be the only thing I would probably comment about it in addition to what I did.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think he sees red lights. Penalty.
They're just jerseys.
Yeah, exactly. He's going one way or the other. Did he thread it, to Harris for any particular reason? I don't think so. But I completely agree. I think there's just something about, and I think it's encouraging for the future where I was trying to go to, that, yeah, he was excited because it was his first action, but it was against a quality defense. And the narrative that, oh, they weren't playing their starters or anything is ridiculous, because he was throwing against Aqib Talib. He was having to fend off Von Miller. Maybe it wasn't 100% of the snap count, but it was there.
Yeah.
And I take away not only that for him, but my other big takeaway from that Denver game, and that's where I was wanting to go next, is, and Matt, I defer to you because of your expertise. I'll just throw out my opinion, rip it apart. But I think when teams get that film and they start preparing for the Chiefs this upcoming season, I think the Denver film is a reason not to play cover three against this guy. And I expect to see a mixture of two and maybe four to try and give him fewer lanes or smaller lanes for him to try to pick apart.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see that. You're going to also see probably more zone blitzing. You're going to see some different types of hybrid coverages where it's a combination of, again, man and zone and different looks on different sides of the field, because what they're hoping to get from him is that he'll read one side, think he's confirmed that it's cover two when it turns out to be something else, or man versus zone. So those are the types of things that they're going to try and throw at him to confuse him. And they'll be, that's part of it. But the same token, it's going to be about how this offense dictates coverage looks too. And, Andy Reid's going to be pretty darn good at creating personnel looks where it's like, all right, we're going to line up this way. And if we catch them in cover two, then we're going to attack and not move, change at all. But if it doesn't look like you're reading the coverage we want, I want you to send this guy in motion and we're going to put him over here. And that's going to confirm whether you have that or not. And those types of looks oftentimes dictate, certain matchups that are going to be clearer to him. So, yeah, I mean, I think defenses will, what they will probably do is they're going to look at that Denver tape and they're going to go, we're going to hope that our linebackers can drop fast enough because he's confident in thinking he can fit it over them. And if they can drop fast enough with depth, they're going to be able to intercept some passes because he's too confident in himself there. Or they're going to look at things and say, all right, maybe we can, we don't necessarily want to get him outside the pocket. Let's keep him from getting outside the pocket so that he can, stay inside and try and make him make throws in the middle of the field, even though he's good at that, getting outside and being able to, create a playground type of look. That leads to big problems for the defense, as we saw. So they're going to try and avoid that. And then I think also, they're just going to look at the other thing that he displayed in both games that he's got to kind of curb is, man, if we do get him outside, he's going to let us hit him. He's going to let us hit him all day long because he does not know how to get rid of the ball in enough time to protect himself because he's waiting for that coverage to something to come open. So he's going to, they're going to think if we can hit him enough, maybe we can knock him out of the game because he takes more punishment than he should, like a lot of young gunslingers in that stereotypical mode do.
Yeah, he's looking for the big play. Sorry, Ryan, go ahead.
I just wanted to follow that up because one of the things that kind of caught my eye throughout that game, and I think you highlighted it a couple of times too, is that the Broncos overloaded him a couple of times. And I don't know if that was him trying to stick with the original play and relying, like you said, on his athleticism, and that he's a big guy, and he's obviously willing to take a couple of hits. I'm sure he got yelled at about that, but I wonder if to me, that's one of the areas that I think he needs to work on, is identifying what he needs to do with his blockers in order to buy himself that time and stay in the pocket.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also a part of developing rapport and trust, because you do have to know where your blockers are going to be and or where you think in theory they're going to be and in practice where they are, and kind of get a feel for their movement and how quick they are. And also it's part of getting acclimated to the speed of the game. I mean, this was his first professional game, and the difference between Von Miller coming off the edge and, you know, some guy at Oklahoma coming off the edge. I mean, that guy at Oklahoma maybe in 2 or 3 years may be a quality NFL player. But the number of guys who are as, you know, there's probably, you know, 4 to 5 guys who have developed the skills on a roster at a major college team who will be reserves, or maybe 1 or 2 of them will be starters, not even like Von Miller, like players that he may face every week in the Big 12. But, you know, unless he was playing at a national championship level type of team, he wasn't facing that level of starter NFL talent across the board. So the speed of the game, the intensity, the power, all the rhythm of the game is very different. And he was doing this against, again, an elite defense at times, you know, last year in his first start. So, you know, talking about his pocket play, I would just say that we're probably overanalyzing that aspect of his play, because we haven't seen enough of him in NFL pockets yet to know what he will adjust to and what he won't adjust to. And I know that, you know, that's probably, it's good thing. It's nice fodder to be able to talk about, but at this stage, I'd say it's premature.
The one thing that I will mention talking about the future that really has me excited on Mahomes is, obviously, throughout the draft process, everybody talked about how big his arm was. And, you know, in Kansas City with Alex Smith, Alex had a decent arm, but it wasn't anywhere near what Mahomes' arm is. And that's obvious. But what Mahomes has shown to me is his accuracy was very underrated and never talked about, in my opinion. And his accuracy along with that arm are going to be lethal for years to come as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the reason that I know I was on in my RSP film rooms on YouTube, I had Mark Schofield on, who's also doing some work with me now.
And you guys were giggling, if I remember correctly.
At my site. Yeah, man, we're giggling like schoolgirls, man, you know, watching him doing this work. And Mark really put it so aptly, and, you know, with the World Cup going on, he was you know, this year he brought up a soccer reference and talked about a soccer player by the name of Zidane. I think that's how his name is pronounced. It may not be. But he's known for being just an artist with ball placement and in terms of shots and passes and daring. And there's a level, and I talked about it this way, is that there's a level of genius to Mahomes' game. And I know a lot of people, and they mistake it for, you know, dumb gunslinger activity, but there's a higher level in which he sees the field, and a lot of guys who are creative quarterbacks have that ability, and they're willing to try and do it so that they will stretch those boundaries. Alex Smith is the ultimate, is one of the more ultimate task-oriented quarterbacks. If you tell him this is what you need to do at this stage, and there's a list of things he needs to do A through Z, he will remember every step and do it to the letter. And he may hesitate between X and Y, and that may get you in trouble when he does get you in trouble. But you know what he's supposed to, he knows what he's supposed to do. You can count on him to be going through that list. You know, he's not going to make a dumb error veering off the script. And he's so technically
smart. Can I ask you a quick question in that regard? Because I think this was one of the things I was also excited about from Mahomes, learning from Alex Smith, is I do think that Alex knew A to Z extremely well. And I did see the hesitation in his throws from time to time. But I also think Mahomes was so far the other direction, getting a little bit of pullback and learning from Alex is really going to help him as well.
Oh, absolutely. Because it, you know, getting a chance to work with someone who's different than you and learn from them and gain that, it will help you with preparation. It'll help you with understanding the day to day. And that helps you play your game to the best of ability. Because even if you are not an A to Z guy who does the task oriented type of play, you still have to prepare.
Right.
Because creative people, you know, people think of improvisers as just like you listen to music and you think you're listening to them play and you hear like jazz musicians. And I used to be an aspiring jazz musician. So it was like, you know, I can explain it this way. Often people, when I think of jazz, they're like, oh, they're just making it up, moving their fingers and playing all this wild stuff. And sometimes it sounds really good, but other times you listen to it and it looks like, you know, abstract impressionist art, you know, that's, or modern art that, you know, someone comes by and looks at and goes, my 3-year-old could do that. You know, it's, you get those range of responses, but even that kind of music is rooted in theory. And it's rooted in a lot of preparation and understanding of your instrument and understanding of what's being played in the background and how to interact with that and do those things. You're just being more daring and more abstract with what you're doing. And Patrick Mahomes is kind of that guy. He's not to that extreme of a level, but he's more like an improviser who plays blues-based music, you know, old Kansas City music, you know, and you would say that there was some, you know, you're preparing, you're just also more daring and willing to let loose in a way where it's a little bit more creative and not strictly to a theme. And it's one where you're comfortable being spur of the moment because you know how to be precise and you know how to be musical and you know how to be in rhythm and you can do something that other people may not see. I mean, Tom Brady is a task oriented quarterback to the nth degree. He's one of the greatest ever task oriented quarterbacks that you would ever imagine. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, Brett Favre and John Elway were creative quarterbacks. You know, they were able to do a little bit of both. I'd say that Joe Montana was more creative than given credit for, even though he also learned to be very much of a taskmaster. You know, so it's a range of behaviors. And when you look at Mahomes in that range, you understand that he is a guy that he will just be, you're going to just see him be more aggressive and be willing to go with the flow in a way where Smith was like, you know, step one, step two, step three, throw the ball away. Mahomes will go step one, step two, you know what? Let's go here. Let's go to five and then come back to three. And see how that works out. And there will be some times that you're going to wish that he never tried that. And there are going to be other times that, you know, it's that whole no, 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 yes, 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 yes type of result. And that's, you're going to get some of that with him because that's who he is. And that's who Andy Reid is okay with him being. It's just that what you don't want him doing is, you know, he's going to have a loose kind of way of managing him to a level where it's like, okay, you have to do these three steps. And if you don't do these three steps, then you have no basis to be able to go off and improvise a little bit. Or the improvisational decisions you're making, they have to be rooted in logic. And that's the thing. He's always rooted in logic. Jay Cutler wasn't always rooted in logic. You know, Vince Young wasn't always rooted in logic. Michael Vick wasn't always rooted in logic when he was throwing the ball in certain stages until Andy Reid got a hold of him, because Michael Vick in Atlanta, they sent Steve Young down there to try and work with him. And he, you know, he wasn't ready for that. He didn't want to. He was the toast of the town and having a good time. And when he spent some time in jail, and, you know, in addition to thinking about things that were more important about like why he was there, he probably also thought about, if I ever get a chance to play again, I'm going to listen to my coaches and I'm going to try and be the player that they told me I could be. And that one year that he had with Andy Reid, where he was the starter, was his best year as a passer. And a lot of it was him doing the things that, you know, he was being more controlled in the pocket so that he could afford himself second and third chance opportunities to make logical decisions as opposed to dropping his eyes, turning his back on the defense and playing backyard ball. And then, you know, and that's what a lot of running or scrambling type of quarterbacks who aren't refined do, but guys like Russell Wilson, guys like Brett Favre, you know, guys like Patrick Mahomes, they know how to, you know, work within the structure, but still be creative. And that's what you're going to see from him.
Man, I like where you're going, even though I'm a Merle Haggard type guy
myself. Hey, man, country music's good.
Right? I'm really glad we can agree on that. Let's take a quick second. We'll come back and we'll get down to the meat of the future.
Matt, I just want a stat prediction. If you could throw out numbers, what do you think Mahomes is going to do?
Yeah, it's a great question.
And I hate putting you on the spot, but I think so.
Yeah, well, you know, I do a lot of fantasy football writing over Football Guys, so, you know, I should be doing some projections there. And I would say that if you look at, you know, Mahomes on this level, let me think about the yards for a minute. But I'll say I think he's going to get at about 30 touchdowns. I think that he'll probably have about 16 to 18 interceptions is probably in the range that I'm going to say. And I'm being conservative in the kind of skeptical view. I could totally see him having like less than 12 and everyone just rejoicing about how great of a season that he had. But I think he's going to be more like, you know, 31 touchdowns, probably about somewhere between, you know, 15 to 17 interceptions. And I think somewhere around 4,100 yards passing. I think it's going to be a good year for him statistically. And people are just going to wish that he cuts down on the interceptions and some of the plays that he'll make. I mean, the fear for me is that he'll look great in a lot of moments. And what you're going to be talking about next year is all the fans and media who are saying, yeah, he got us into the playoffs, but here we go again. We haven't gotten deeper enough yet. And it was on him because he made the big mistake that cost us this game or cost us this opportunity. And they're going to harp on that rather than the fact that this offense blew up.
Good grief.
You know, I mean,
please you know, let me have
I
that.
Think that's what's going to happen.
I'm serious. Please let me have that because honestly, if he gets them to the playoffs this year, that's better than I really could see it going, just because I do think his interceptions could really cost them. But, and I'm not sure about the defense yet, which is not something we're talking about at all whatsoever. But, you know, if he can get them to the playoffs, I don't care if he has a costly mistake and he loses the game for them. He needs that experience. He needs that pressure. The only way you're ever going to have any clue as to how much more pressure you're going to be under in the playoffs is to actually experience it.
Yeah, this is on the job experience. You have to learn in this fashion. It's a learning develop quarterback development has to be a combination of sitting and also playing. And I don't know how they do that and how they should figure it out, but we know that it's been an ongoing debate. Should they sit? Should they play right away? And I kind of lean towards they need to sit or at least have some intermittent use. And the guys who got to play a little, you know, on an intermittent level, and we're given an opportunity sometimes to sit or to be benched, but not be denigrated for the fact that they made mistakes and said, oh, well, we don't know if this guy's ever going to be good enough and tell the media that after a bad game. You know, that's bad coaching as opposed to sending a guy and going, you know what? You messed that up. You're still our guy. And if we get close, I'm going to give you a chance to win it for us because you are our guy. But you need to sit and just kind of sit back and realize that you screwed up here and you let the game get away from you a little bit and you need to calm down some. And again, it's about emotion, you know, emotion. We oftentimes deny emotion and miss the most important parts of football because it is an emotional game and they're all human beings playing it and they have to get used to that level of emotion and also understand that they can trust each other and that they can trust the coaching staff that they're with so that when they screw up, they're not automatically gone. And you know, those are things that take experience and unpleasant situations for that to occur. And you have to build that. You don't just, you know, I mean, yes, there are some cultures where you don't meet your spouse and you just get married right away. And it's like, that's it. You're married and, you know, that's the law and here it goes. But, you know, at least in our culture, it's, you know, you meet someone, you get to know them, you try and you got to figure out whether you can trust them or not and trust each other before you decide you're going to pop that question. And I think that that's the same thing that goes on with quarterback play is that there is a courting period here, even though we may say that, you know, we like to say that the coach is married to the player, but in terms of developing that trust, it's still an ongoing process, and it always is with marriages anyway. So there you go.
And it will be with these two. Now, folks, at Matt Waldman on Twitter, WaldmanRSP on YouTube, and you can find it all at MattWaldmanRSP.com. And I miss anything?
No, man. I do have a webcast, podcast, the RSP cast that's coming out with a lot of guests that come out weekly. So check that out as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to have one more thing to listen to. Well, thank you for this time. I know we kind of stretched it, but we appreciate you taking all this time to be with us.
Man, I love talking about Patrick Mahomes, so this was great.
So basically what I just heard is Matt said he'll be back, you know, once a month during the season. So,
hey man, you know, one of my friends who knows me pretty well and has also been turned on by Mahomes sent me a Mahomes to Watkins shirt the other day. So I got one in the mail. I'm ready. I just need to get me a, you know, a Kansas City hat, I think. So
I think we can figure that out. Folks, make sure you check out Matt's work, and we will be back with you next time whenever this 17-part show comes out. But we'll get that done, and thank you very much for listening today. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review, and reach out to us on Twitter, @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.